Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the We Are Podcast on DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcasting Network. He's Corey Geiger. I'm Jared Prugar. Corey, sometimes we all like to get paid. And for some people, that payday is coming up pretty soon and in a big way, right?
Hey, Jared, you get a raise.
I wish it was me.
Hell, I didn't get a raise. What are we talking about
today? That I work 72 hours in like a 7 day period, or 72 in 4 days or something. I don't know. They told me I work a lot. And it's true, but let's not talk about us because it's not either of us. Our bank accounts aren't impacted, but there is some cryptic terminology after Penn State beat Rutgers 28-0 Saturday at Beaver Stadium by the head football coach, James Franklin.
And we don't know, look, for sure, we're recording this late Saturday night. We don't know for sure that all of this is going to happen. We're going to tell you what we know. The Board of Trustees, the subcommittee on compensation is going to meet on Tuesday. All right. Ben Jones from statecollege.com was the first one to find that out. I did check their website. There's no time listed for the subcommittee on compensation for their meeting. James Franklin will meet the media on Tuesday at 12:30, as he always does. Here is the money line from James Franklin's post-game press conference when he was asked if he would go on the record of saying that he's not going anywhere. And he said this: I thought something was going to happen a little bit sooner. Tuesday, we can talk about that as much as you guys want to talk about that. So the way I read into this, Jared, is that James Franklin and the school probably have some kind of agreement in place for a new contract. We can maybe get into some big, big details here in a second. And I'll ask Penn State fans if you want the coach to get a new contract, because it's not a given that every Penn State fan out there is completely 100% enamored with James Franklin coaching Penn State for, say, 10 years, wink, wink. All right, so, but he says, he gets up to the quarterback club on Wednesday, says, I'm not going anywhere. But maybe he thought something was going to happen where this stuff would have been finalized maybe with the school, and so he could maybe mention it. Then Mel Tucker in the Michigan State news breaks, and now we've got the compensation committee meeting on it sounds to me, Jared, we can't confirm this. There's no way to know for sure. It sounds to me like that a deal is in place. The compensation committee has to approve it on Tuesday. And then we would expect to be able to ask James Franklin about it at 12:30 on Tuesday. So that, if you connect all the dots, it seems like that's what's going to go down here.
Connecting the dots is one of my favorite activities in first grade. Now that we're in adults, but no, it makes sense. I mean, I don't think James Franklin was ever, as much as I want to say that he was seriously going somewhere. Let's be real. Penn State is a good spot for him, mainly because of the lack of stress that it would take compared to USC or LSU. The LSU won a national title within the last 3 years. Ed Orgeron blew his chance there. He's gone. You know, you look at the SEC, that's a cutthroat conference. But the big thing for me that sticks out here is that Mel Tucker got 10 years, $95 million. It's $9.5 million a year. Who has he beat? Michigan. I understand that that's not a directional Michigan. That's Michigan, the Wolverines. That's the team that they had to beat every year. He beat them once. This is year two for Mel Tucker at Michigan State. James Franklin has beat Ohio State once. So that's kind of even, you know, with Mel Tucker. Now he's also been there a heck of a lot longer. He's won a Big Ten championship. Where do you think, you know, let's say 10 years, where do you think this is going to fall as far as compensation goes?
All right. So again, we're talking on a Saturday night. If people listen to this on a Wednesday, they could say, you guys are idiots. You didn't know any of that stuff. We're connecting the dots here. All right. So James Franklin has 4 years left on his contract through 2025. He makes $6 million a year plus some incentives that get it up to around $7 million. Okay. So some people that I was talking to seem to think that the scuttlebutt is that Franklin's going to get a 10-year deal. All right. So, and really even maybe more importantly than the money we're going to talk about that he's going to get is the details of the contract of what he wants from Penn State. That's what James Franklin has been beating around, not even beating around the bush, but just discussing frequently as of late. If I had to guess, I would say, I can't believe I'm saying these words here, Jared. If I had to guess, I would say James Franklin is going to get a 10-year deal worth $80 to $85 million because that's what his agent is hired to do to get the money. Mel Tucker got 95. But again, no matter what that money is, if it's 75, 80, 85, James Franklin is going to want ironclad assurances from the school. They're going to take care of this from a facility standpoint and that from a facility standpoint and this from an organization. He is going to want not just the dollar. Everybody's going to pay attention to the dollar figure on Franklin's. And again, if this comes into play, we don't know for sure, but if this comes into play, but what James Franklin is that's important to him is not necessarily just how much money he's making. He truly wants to win a national championship. And I do believe that he truly 100% feels, Jared, he cannot win a national championship given the current level of commitment all around from Penn State, not just with his salary. So that's what we really want to ask James on Tuesday. If he gets a contract, if we get the terms, maybe we won't get the terms. I don't know. What assurances do you want specifically from the school?
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing is the commitment to facility upgrades. And they've done that with the Lash Football Complex, but it's so much more than just the Lash Football Building or Haluba Hall, right? Beaver Stadium is not an appeasing structure. The atmosphere inside the stadium is wonderful, right? They had 100, and I'm using quotation marks, and Corey can't see me because the light in my office burned out literally as we were beginning this podcast. But I'm using quotation marks and saying there are 106,000 people at Beaver Stadium on Saturday afternoon. There were not. There might have been 75, 80,000 at the most. It was a cold day. It was Rutgers. Nobody was really excited about the game. But my thing is they talked about Beaver Stadium upgrades pre-COVID and making the outside of the structure actually look appeasing and appealing to people. And I think that's the biggest thing. But, I mean, it's all about the haves and the have-nots when it comes to NCAA football, basketball, everything. Because it's about the facilities. It's about how can you pamper your athletes to keep them there and develop them as best as you can. When Bill O'Brien inherited this program, they were still using Smith machines. They were not using free weights. That's how archaic things were. Now, of course, things have gotten a lot better, a hell of a lot better by this time now compared to what it was when Bill O'Brien took over prior to James Franklin. So the biggest thing, facility upgrades, and then if I'm Sandy Barber or if I'm Eric Barron, I'm going to sit there and say, James Franklin, hey, if we're going to pay you all this money and that's going to put him, you know, that's, again, up in the upper tier, you know, that's going to put him up in the top four highest paid coaches in the country. I mean, you look at it, Nick Saban is top 10, number one. Dabo Swinney is up there. David Shaw, Lincoln Riley, Dan Mullen. And, oh, my God, there's some overpaid guys up there. But you got to start putting the results on the field. And you know what? It's put up or shut up time with this contract. And I'm sure the buyout's going to be absolutely insane. But I'm also saying, too, if we're going to give you these upgrades, please quit saying that you're going somewhere else.
That's going to have to end immediately. I don't ever want to hear that again. But let's have the conversation here as we you know, roll through this segment, Jared. Because, look, Penn State beat Rutgers. They've got Michigan State on Saturday this week. Michigan State just laid an egg against Ohio State. So that's a chance for Penn State to end the season with a nice road win against a team that's ranked, Michigan State, although they'll take a big hit. But that would be a chance to go 8-4. 8-4 probably gets you to the Outback Bowl. The Outback Bowl probably gets you an Ole Miss or something in the SEC. That's a chance for another good. There's a chance to finish this season on a really positive note. 9-4 would look a hell of a lot better than 7-5 and going to the Music City Bowl and maybe not caring. But here's the thing, Jared, and if you're going to give James Franklin a 10-year contract, is he worth that? Has he earned that? He's had a lot of success. There's no doubt about he turned Penn State football back into a nationally prominent program. I'll disagree with what you said earlier. I absolutely 1,000,000% believe he would have been interested in going to USC. I don't know about LSU, but maybe going to USC if the offer was right. I don't know that he even has an offer right now. USC, is USC willing to wait to see if James Franklin beats Michigan State to go 7-5 or 8-4? I think USC has probably moved on. Now, we don't know for sure how that goes.
Well, these programs have to start making decisions quick.
Well, USC is going to have to make a hire probably within a week of the season being. USC will have name a new head coach, if I had to guess, in about 8 to 10 days after the season's over. And so my guess is, you know, again, this is just a guess, that there were probably a lot of negotiations between James Franklin's agent, Jimmy Sexton, and USC, maybe some with LSU. And at some point, maybe those schools just decided to move on. Now, it's also possible James Franklin decided to move on because simultaneously, this is how the game is played, his agent was having conversations with Penn State and saying, how much can you get James and how much can you get everything else lined up so that Penn State can compete with all the rest of these things. So I think this game has been being played for the last number of weeks. If James ends up staying at Penn State and gets an 8-10 year contract, I don't think it's a slam dunk that 100% of the fans out there are going to say, yay, James is not going anywhere. He's awesome. The greatest coach ever. I think James Franklin has slipped in the way he's viewed by a lot of Penn State fans this year. And I think next year could be a struggle, you know, depending on who the quarterback is, and they're losing a lot of great talent. So if you're going to sign a guy to a 10-year deal and pay him 80-something million, if that indeed does be that, you can't go out and lay an egg. Just ask Mel Tucker. I hope Mel Tucker at Michigan State has signed that contract already, because they were down 49-0 at the half this week. And if you're going to give a guy $95 million, I don't ever under any circumstance, hell, if you're playing the Dallas Cowboys, I don't want you to be down 49-0 at the half.
No, and it was bad. We were watching the game because some people on this podcast decided they take the Michigan State because they were the underdogs by 19.5 points. Obviously, some people should never gamble again. But, you know, I'm looking at the Big Ten salaries here, right? And this is as of October of this year. James Franklin, as of right now, is currently the highest paid Big Ten football coach. Then comes Ryan Day at $6.6 million. Pat Fitzgerald at $5.7 million. Mel Tucker got $5.6 million. So he's
now, where's Harbaugh on that? I thought Harbaugh was making more than Franklin.
I see the list that I'm looking at is on footballscoop.com, which is off of USA Today's. But it's very possible. It's very, very possible that that the University of Michigan didn't report it.
Yeah, I got $8 million for Harbaugh. Sometimes you see these from different places, but I'm seeing Harbaugh at $8 million. I thought he was higher paid than James.
But and that's the thing too, is are these coaches worth it? Probably not, right?
No coach is worth it. Saban is, but I don't know that any coach is. Again, Mel Tucker, you're getting him $95 million and you just got destroyed. And if you lose to Penn State, I mean,
they're gonna be eating crow in Sparty land.
Yep.
Where they just, you know, they just announced that Tom Izzo's the name of the football complex is after Tom Izzo. And they've announced all this money up there, the support that they're getting in Michigan State and East Lansing. But man, there are no results there. At least when Franklin gets his extensions, he's at least won something. Mel Tucker beat Michigan once, you know? It's just so tough to validate some of these things. And I'm not trying to defend James Franklin, but in this situation, at least James Franklin has at least won something.
He won a Big Ten in 2016, had a good run in 2017, 18, 19. 2020 really changed a lot of things. And I think James Franklin can have a lot of success at Penn State. But this is where we break things down is, who's worth $8 or $9 million a year?
Saban, without a doubt.
Yeah. And you know, James Franklin, I think, has a lot of great characteristics as a college football coach, primarily as a CEO. He's a great representative of the school. Personally, Jared, I've dealt with James Franklin since he arrived as a media member. I think he is top notch. He is a pro. He is respectful and a professional with all of us in the media. I don't want him to, selfishly, I don't want him to go because he makes my job easier. He makes all our jobs easier because he's a great guy to deal with. But at the same time, they were 4-5 last year. They were ranked fourth in the country a month and a half ago.
Then lost three in a row.
And then lose 4 out of 5. So, you know, if you're going to make this kind of commitment, and let's point this out, President Eric Barron retiring after this year, Sandy Barber has a little less than 2 years left. So now if she, and we think she'll probably, you know, retire. So now the next president at Penn State and the next athletic director at Penn State are going to inherit the most all-powerful football coach making a massive amount of money, and they won't have any power, or their hands will be, you see what I'm getting? That's a problem. Mm-hmm. That can be an issue for administration.
Yeah, and that's so tough because, you know, everybody wants their guy, right? You want to hire your guy, the guy that you trust, the guy that you want to bring up. And when it comes to stuff like this, man, there are a lot of jobs on the line. There are millions of dollars at stake. And that's just not just football revenue. That's fundraising throughout the university, right? And a lot of those coaches, like Franklin, are really good at fundraising. And that is a lot of the job now is you're schmoozing donors. You're trying to get that money for your program, for the university. And that's what makes it tough because that's why it's the CEO thing. The S's and O's that James Franklin spends time on are very minimal when it comes down to it because he's busy talking to donors, talking to administrators, you know. They have this meeting set up on Tuesday where it's, you know, the subcommittee. But when you're when you bring in a new AD, and how many times do you see this throughout the country, right? Where you bring in a new AD or a new president and they get rid of that old guy really quick. Just because, hey, maybe the ideals don't line up. Maybe, you know, something along those lines just doesn't add up. But hey, good for James Franklin if this happens. Good for Penn State. Stability is always good. But if I'm a Penn State fan, I really, really just want to stop dealing with James Franklin saying, I'm just not here to talk about it. We'll talk about it when we can. And please, for the love of God, quit entertaining the idea of going elsewhere.
And as we close this segment, we'll talk some more about the football game in the next segment. As we close this segment, if indeed, and again, we don't know for sure, if indeed he gets something anywhere close to a 10-year deal, James Franklin – will have been at Penn State for 18 years at that point, or, you know, could be. And there won't be any more talk about him going this, that, or the other place. He just can't, he won't. Could he get fired during that time? Yeah. But hey folks, I always thought there were a handful of jobs that James Franklin could want to leave Penn State for. Number one for me was always USC. Then there's Alabama and Clemson, but I don't think those are likely. And then you throw in maybe Florida. I think Florida could be likely. They're 2-6 in the SEC. But outside of those handful, you know, I don't think James is going to Texas. I don't think James is going to Notre Dame. And there are other good jobs in college football that would necessarily fit James Franklin. So outside, if USC and LSU were off the table, you know, Florida could happen in a few years. Who knows? I just don't see James going anywhere now. And that will please a lot of Penn State fans, Jared. But I bet you that there are a lot of Penn State fans out there that are going to be a little nervous and wanting to see James Franklin improve as a football coach and not have repeats like we saw in 2020 and this year.
No, absolutely. And speaking of nervous and speaking of results, let's talk about the game when we come back on the We Are Podcast and DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcasting Network. Welcome back to the DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcasting Network and the We Are Podcast. Corey, if you tuned into the game in the second half, you watched a really good football game and you watched Christian VU play. But if you sat through the first 29 minutes of that football game, you might just now be waking up. That was brutal.
Yeah, yeah, it was rough for a while. But then VU comes in, and, you know, hey, look, I give that kid a lot of credit. He looked really good. The numbers were good. Christian Bayou, 15 of 24, 235, and 3 touchdowns. To me, Jared, I'll ask you this. Even more important than the numbers, maybe not more important, but just was the eye test. He looked
absolutely
like a college quarterback. He looked like he could function in a pretty high level in the offense. What'd you think?
He was poised. He was great in the pocket. I know you and I always talk during the games. Corey and I sit beside each other in the podcast. We just really love each other's company a lot of the time. So we sit next to each other and we communicate back and forth about what we see. And at some points in the game, and before we move on, I think it's fair to say Penn State was riddled with illness. There was an outbreak at Michigan with the flu. And I don't know if there's anything to kind of really dive into here, but Penn State and Michigan played last week. Penn State gets riddled with this illness. They had about 35 guys sick this week. A lot of them were big time players. Sean Clifford, they didn't have a scholarship quarterback practice this week until Friday. So they were riddled with illness. It was like a triage unit. They had IVs, they had throw up. It was just a sight to be seen, according to a lot of the people that we talked to after the game. But Veyu comes in and gets the job done, and he just looked poised. And like I said before, we were watching Sean Clifford, and he was skittish to an extent. I mean, and he's, you know, sometimes he's not as patient in the pocket as he could be, but he was running into different things, and he just was really not comfortable from what we saw today. And then Christian Veyu comes in and just gets the job done. He settles in nicely. He stays, steps up into the pocket, runs when he needs to, does not force things. And his deep balls, man, they looked super effortless. And some of the balls that he threw, you know, the Jahan Dotson touchdown was impressive. But the pass to Parker Washington, the back shoulder, a little bit of an underthrow, he's off balance, and he just puts it where a plate, the only place that his receiver can catch it. And, hey, that's just what the doctor ordered for Penn State.
Yeah, I'll tell you. And, it's a positive because Christian Bayou came in and did so well. That it just makes you really shake your head and wonder, why didn't they go with him at Iowa? Why didn't they go with him against Illinois? Now, Iowa was – I got to look back at the date of Iowa. I mean, it's been a while. It's been, you know, a month and a half or so. Iowa was a while back. And James said he did get better. You know, he needed to get better. But I just wonder – Could take one Roberson. They thought he gave them the best chance to win against Iowa. As we look back on it, I mean, how could that have been possible? October 9th. So you're talking 6 weeks ago. How could it have been possible that take one Roberson, who looked completely dysfunctional as a quarterback, that offense looked dysfunctional. Was Christian Bayou not in position to go out there and babysit that lead and hold on to a win there? Because that changes the season. And then couldn't Christian Bayou have played better than a 60% Sean Clifford against Illinois? And that changes the season. And so one or two things happened here. Either the coaches were just being loyal to Taequann Roberson and giving him the first crack because he's been there for 3 years. I think that's what happened. This notion that they kept saying it was obvious to everyone. James Franklin said, quote, obvious to everyone. That Roberson gave them a better chance to win against Iowa. So either Christian Bayou became Superman over the last 6 weeks and improved light years, or the coaches made a bad decision and maybe just went with Roberson because out of loyalty. But look, that kid who played quarterback against Rutgers, Jared, would have beaten Iowa and Illinois.
Yeah, and keep in mind, this is Rutgers. They played Rutgers. Rutgers was held under 200 yards by the Penn State defense. The Penn State defense played incredibly well. They just played their game. They played really well. It was great defensively. It's so tough because as a coach, you want to be loyal to guys that stick it through. And James Franklin was very complimentary to Taequann Roberson. But when you have a true freshman, Christian Veyu hadn't played since 2019. He lost his senior season to COVID. He's an early enrollee. He doesn't get a lot of time in spring camp, spring ball. But he comes in today and looks – every bit the part made him a highly touted guy. And hey, listen, you know, could he have played against Iowa? Maybe. Could he have played against Illinois? Also possible. But again, we don't see what they do day after day after day. They don't see that. And what kind of struck me is as interesting as when James Franklin said the difference between the two never really grew. It never really, like, you would expect Taquan Roberson as a third year guy in the system to be light years above.
Right. Christian and Bayou. He wasn't.
But he never was. He never was. Wasn't.
And that's what to me is so striking. If it was obvious to everyone that Taquan, they had Taquan for 3 years. Okay. I just don't necessarily buy this thing that it was obvious. I think they went with loyalty. I think they gave the next guy up the opportunity to lose the job, and he lost the job. Maybe there's nothing wrong with, could they have known that there would be 8 false start penalties? No. Could they have known that things would have gotten out that far out of hand at Iowa? And it's Iowa. Kinnick Stadium's a difficult place, man. It's a really tough place. But I'll tell you, I just know that if Christian Bayou that we saw against Rutgers plays in those other two games, they don't lose those other two games. I just can't. This guy functions at a pretty high level already.
Yeah, and let's be real. How often under James Franklin has an incumbent guy, has a guy that's come in as a freshman, upstaged or leaped over somebody or left over somebody on the depth chart? How often do you see that? It never happens for James Franklin. So loyalty is a big factor, and I get that. I respect that. But, you know, in this situation, that loyalty could have potentially cost Penn State its season. Now, on the flip side, now you're going into Michigan State. If Sean Clifford is still not healthy, because he did get fairly banged up in the short amount of time he was in the game. He was not protected very well by the Penn State offensive line. Though Christian Bayou did a really good job of staying upright and staying healthy. But do you go with Bayou or do you go with Clifford? Because this is a big part of the loyalty.
I love this question because I do think that there's a lot to it. If Sean Clifford's healthy, look, and we wondered, did Sean Clifford come out because of the flu or did he come out because he got banged up? And it seemed like James made the mention, you know, it wasn't working, so they pulled him.
And he never would have mentioned if it was an injury either.
Yeah, he didn't. Right. He didn't reference anything about getting back. So I think it was just the flu. And so from that standpoint, I think that Sean is probably, and look, we've all had the flu or a bug. It's usually gone after 5-6 days. My guess is he'll be fine by the time Michigan State game rolls around. The case I would make, and look, just for the record, Sean Clifford should start. He's a 3-year starter. It could be his last college regular season game. I think it will be. He's done everything you've asked him to do. I think he deserves that opportunity to start. The case I would make for Bayou, Jared, would be, who's your quarterback going to be next year?
Mm-hmm.
Can you use Michigan State to find out more about what you've got with Christian Bayou? Because if you think Sean's going to leave, and James probably has a little bit of an idea, although maybe the ultimate final decision maybe hasn't necessarily been made. But if James thinks that Clifford's going to leave, give Bayou a start, see what he does, and then that could help you determine how aggressive you need to be in the transfer portal. Because I don't think Drew Aller, as a true freshman, is going to be ready to start from week one next year. Could Drew Aller start as the season goes on and develop maybe like Bayou did? Sure, it's possible. But I don't want to turn over the job at Penn State to a true freshman in the season opener. Their schedule next year is extremely difficult right off the bat. All right. So how aggressive do you want to be in the portal? Could you use Bayou to find out a little bit against Michigan State?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to look at it because this is an evaluation period. Penn State's clinched a bowl game. You're going to get that extra month of preparation too. You're going to get bowl prep, so that's going to mean some more reps. And I mean, your objective, there's money on the line here for players and coaches, I would expect, for bowl games. Now that players can make money off of their images and likenesses, because say Sean Clifford goes to the Outback Bowl, hey, they want to advertise with him. They can use him in promotions now, if they so choose. Bloomin' onions for everybody if Sean Clifford scores a rushing touchdown. Don't quote me on that, but you know, no rules just right there in Aussie land. But you know, that's one of those situations now that there's a lot at stake for these bowl games. But you get that extra month of preparation, And if you give Sean Clifford an extra week to heal, he's been banged up this year. That's no secret to anybody. So yeah, give AU, and maybe you give him an option and see what he can do as in a start against a team that's going to be ranked. I would say that they're probably going to be ranked in the top 15. I think that losing by 49 or 48 or whatever they lost by today will banish them to below the top 10. I would imagine that would kick them significantly out.
Well, but the flip side is you got to win this game. This is a huge game. And you, I do think Clifford, a healthy, fully healthy Clifford, probably gives them a better chance to win than a Christian Veiu.
Okay? Now, I will say this. On the flip side, though, when coming into this game, if Sean Clifford goes out, there was zero confidence in what was behind him. Now that's changed.
Now you do feel better. And look, Michigan State's pass defense is atrocious. C.J. Stroud threw for 1,400 yards against him Saturday.
And 1,200 of that was in the first half.
I mean, it was ridiculous. Okay, the guy completed like 32 out of 35 passes. Just insane. All right, so, you know, but again, Penn State's got to win that game. Mm-hmm. It's a big game. You go with Clifford. I would not at all be opposed to giving Christian Veiu two or three meaningful series in that game, again, as this development and evaluation period.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if you can go in there and see what Clifford can do, I mean, the biggest thing is he's got to be healthy. And if he's not healthy, now at least you have that sigh of relief. Okay, well, Veiu, even though it was Rutgers, this is Rutgers. And they're a pretty good defensive team typically under Greg Schiano. But it's still Rutgers, right? They're the armpit of the Big Ten. They are also from New Jersey, so they're the armpit of a lot of things. But let's be perfectly honest here. I feel much more confident if I'm a Penn State fan going into Michigan knowing, hey, you know what? We might actually have a little bit of a future here in our quarterback in Christian Veiu. Now, maybe we don't need to go to the portal next year.
Well, again, I think they're going to need to go to the portal to get somebody of depth. But the question is, becomes if Clifford's back, well, you're not really going to be able to get anybody from the portal.
No.
Who's going to kind of want to come in and come and know that he's going to sit behind a fourth year starting quarterback. If Clifford, if Clifford is back, but if Clifford's not back, your options are an experienced guy from the portal, Christian Veiu, or maybe Drew Allen. Again,
don't forget about Mason Stahl. Let's not forget about Mason Stahl.
People are getting on me for never including Bo Prabhula and all this. It's not a knock on Bo. I just don't think that's going to happen.
So again, you just don't have enough experience. I mean,
right. So if Christian Veiu comes back next year and he's got some, now you bring in a guy from the portal and you say, Christian, you're going to chat. You're going to compete with this guy for the starting job.
Yeah, I mean, hey, I'm very interested to see how this offseason plays out because I don't think Sean Clifford should come back to Penn State. That's not knocking Sean Clifford. I think it's just time to move on. Sometimes, you know, marriages are meant to end. And I think, you know, he's done all that he can. He's a 3-year starter. He's won a lot of football games for Penn State. And they're going to go out and try to go out on top. And I don't know whether that means he's going to go pro or whether that means he's going to exhaust that last year of eligibility. But you know what? It's the youth movement was served today. They were up front. They were pretty young. They had Effner. They had Landon Tengwall got some action today. Juice Scruggs was a little bit banged up, but he played center. Caden Wallace. The offensive front looked good, especially with Veiu in the game.
They looked better. Ran for 149 yards, and he threw the ball well. There was a lot to like about this. In the next segment, we'll look ahead to next week and around the country. But maybe you catch Michigan State reeling here and licking their wounds. And who knows? Maybe you catch them at a real good time after they got thumped by Ohio State.
That's right. And we're going to have a real good time here in the third segment of the We Are Podcast and DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcast Network when we come back right after this quick message from our sponsors. Welcome back to the third and final segment of the We Are Podcast and DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcasting Network. For the entirety of this podcast, he's been Corey Geiger. I've been Jared Prugar. Corey, Penn State and Michigan State are playing for the most prestigious trophy in all of sports next week, the Land-Grant Trophy. If you've ever seen the Land-Grant Trophy, I'm sorry. I'm just so sorry. It's just so awfully ugly, but it's so prestigious, right? You know, you got these Land-Grant institutions in Penn State and Michigan State. Why not literally slap a bunch of hodgepodge random things on said trophy and present it to, hey, here's the winner.
The late George Perlis, really good man, coached at Michigan State. He and Joe Paterno worked out this Michigan State game. George Perlis, also an assistant coach for the Steelers on those Super Bowl teams in the 70s. So there's a lot of Pittsburgh folks George Perlis designed the Land-Grant Trophy a number of years ago. He died in 2020, last January. A number of years ago, I reached out to George and did a story on him. And he didn't, not that he was proud, Jared, of the Land-Grant Trophy, but he was proud of the Michigan State-Penn State series being renewed. And I do think I like this series.
Mm-hmm.
We're always going to have Michigan-Ohio State be the marquee, you know, game for the final, you know, weekend of the Big Ten schedule. I like Penn State having a set team at the end of the year. Penn State, Michigan State it's usually a good game. There's usually something riding on the game, maybe not a ton, but Michigan State's been good for the last, you know, good number of years. And so there's a lot riding on this game for both of these programs. And I just think it's become a pretty good rivalry. It'll never be Ohio State, Michigan State. And it'll never be, you know, the old Penn State Pitt from the 70s and 80s. But this is a game I do kind of look forward to, because there have been some quirky things going on in these games over the years, Jared.
Well, yeah, what was it, 2 or 3 years ago? There was a lightning delay that was 3 hours long.
Oh, that was brutal. Brutal. Yeah. We were there. Lansing. Oh.
I remember covering that game from home before covering remote was cool. But it was just, you know – I think it's good to have this type of situation at the end of the season. I really liked Champions Week last year for the Big Ten did.
Yeah.
I thought that was a really unique spin on it, on what was a weird and bizarre season. Of course, Penn State got Illinois and Penn State was on a roll at that point in time. But yeah, I mean, listen, we joke about the Land-Grant Trophy, but it's something to play for. It's pride, right? And you know what? It's good for the university.
Well, it means something too. I mean, Michigan State sitting here.
This means a lot.
It's because a huge game for Michigan State. That's the Rose Bowl. Okay. Yeah. And so go ahead. It means a lot to Penn State as well.
Right. And you know, this is big for Michigan State, because Michigan and Michigan State, if I'm guessing that Ohio State is going to beat Michigan, and I think they're going to beat them rather easily, to be perfectly honest with you. I've watched all three teams. I've watched Ohio State and Michigan play. Ohio State is just absolutely on another level at this point. Ryan Day really has them going and clicking really well. But I think Ohio State's going to beat Michigan. They're going to beat them so bad that the state of Ohio is actually going to remember to say the letter M after next week. But if Michigan loses, they're 7-2. If Michigan State wins, they're 7-2. But if Penn State wins, mm-hmm. Michigan State is 6-3. That's the difference between the Rose Bowl and the other lower tier ball.
Well, the Citrus Bowl, which is still good, but it's not Rose Bowl. And then Penn State, you know, conceivably, I'm looking over all the standings here just to catch Wisconsin 6-2, Iowa 6-2. The Citrus Bowl would go to either Michigan or Michigan State. And then you got all these teams. I guess Wisconsin and Iowa could be in line for the Outback Bowl. And maybe that's still, even if Penn State's 8-4, maybe that still pushes them down to the Music City Bowl. Because again, if they beat Michigan State, they won't get as much of a bump from it as they would have if Michigan State, say, would have played a competitive game against Ohio State.
Yeah, right. I mean, the fact here I am. I'm analyzing. I'm looking at my betting slip yesterday. I'm like, you know what? Michigan State's 19.5 point underdogs. I like Michigan State. I think they have the best running back in the country.
He had 30 yards rushing.
Yeah. So if you ever want betting advice on what not to do, please come see me. But yeah, I mean, listen, this is a, there's a lot on the line here, not just, you know, standings wise, but for going into that bowl prep with some momentum. And if you can go ahead and do that, you know, that's really good for Penn State moving forward, because hey, you get to that bowl prep, you get to the bowl game and you maybe get a win there. You finish out the recruiting cycle, get those guys signed, get them into campus early and enroll, we get ready for spring ball and get back and do this all over again. And, you know, it starts this week. And whether that's with Vayu in the under center, or however you want to say it, or Sean Clifford with his last ride, the last few games here, you know, it's going to be interesting to watch. And, you know, after today, it's a lot more interesting, I guess I should say, as we slow down here at the end of the season.
Well, I'll tell you, Oregon just got destroyed by Utah 38-7. So that is tremendous news for Cincinnati, because, mm-hmm. you know, you got to figure it's going to be – well, look, the Alabama question is still out there. If Georgia beats Alabama, which I think they will, you know, could a two-loss Alabama team still get in? So you're going to have Georgia. You're going to have Ohio State. There's two. Mm-hmm. With Oregon losing, that is phenomenal for Cincinnati. They're number five in the playoff.
Yeah.
You got to think that as long as Cincinnati doesn't just absolutely blow it, that Cincinnati is going to be in the playoff now, because you're going to have Georgia, mm-hmm. Ohio State, Cincinnati, and, you know, maybe either a two-loss Alabama or
a two-loss Alabama.
Everybody else has got a loss, and it would come down to Notre Dame.
Oklahoma State is up
Oklahoma
there.
State is 9-1 or 10-1 now.
And let's not forget Oklahoma either. They're on the outside looking in, but I mean they're winning Oklahoma's by the skin of their
not,
teeth.
They just
I don't think they're any good, but yes.
No. The more I'm looking at this, it's almost going to be, unless Michigan beats Ohio State, which again, I think a two-loss Alabama probably gets in, just because if you just look at it, it's Georgia, Ohio State, Cincinnati, and then your other choices are Alabama, Michigan, Notre Dame, Oklahoma State. I think
worst case scenario happened for the ACC today, and I'm not even saying anything about Pitt, because I think Pitt winning the ACC Coastal is great for that program and Pat Narduzzi and those guys. But Clemson beats Wake Forest, and not only do they beat Wake Forest, they beat them by 21.
Yeah, bad.
That's probably the worst case scenario that they have, mainly because now Wake Forest is going to get bounced from the top 10. They're probably going to be in that 15 to 18 range, with Pitt probably around the same area. You know, it's just, and we still have conference championships, you know, so that's, I think that's going to be the telltale sign here. I think Ohio State's going to win the Big Ten championship. I honestly think right now, Georgia and Ohio State are the two best teams in the country. You know, I've been on the fence about Alabama. I think they're really good. But the way Ohio
they barely
State,
beat Arkansas today.
Yeah, I mean, seven. Ohio State's winning and with authority.
I think Ohio State's number two. I think Ohio State probably, you know, I think Ohio State could very well jump Alabama and go to number two in the playoff rankings, and that's important. That's mm-hmm. important because they would jump Oregon anyway, and the two would play.
Right.
You don't want to play Georgia. You don't want to play Georgia in the semifinal. And so what'll be very interesting, Jared, is that SEC championship game. If Georgia wins, how close is Alabama? Is it a 17-point game? Then probably Alabama could play its way out. If it's a 10-point game or less, and we know how good Georgia is, then yeah, Alabama's probably in. But the problem with that would be this: could you conceive? Yeah, I guess you'd still put Alabama three above Cincinnati, maybe, and then that way you wouldn't have a Georgia-Alabama repeat in the semifinals in a 1-4 game. If you
how about this for pure chaos, Corey? What happens if Michigan wins?
Well, now we got a big, big problem. Although, no, I think Michigan probably just replaces Ohio State in this whole discussion. And Ohio State would be out.
Yeah, I think so too. And I mean, just kind of looking at the Big Ten standings and looking at some different things here, you know, it looks like it's going to be, pending the results this weekend, it's going to be, well, Wisconsin and Iowa are tied at 6-2. Wisconsin and Minnesota play. Minnesota's having a low-key okay year. They're 7-3. Wisconsin has the upper hand over Iowa from when Iowa was broken after Penn State. So that's a plus in the as far as tiebreakers go. So I would expect, you know, it's probably going to be Ohio State and Wisconsin in the Big Ten championship. Big 12 championship, I think, is a lot trickier. You know, who Oklahoma and Oklahoma State are going to be those two. And I think they play this week, if I'm not mistaken. They have to, right?
Yeah, Bedlam, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's going to be the – that's essentially going to be for the Big 12 championship. So that's going to be interesting. That's going to be – you know, if Bedlam happens and pure chaos is going to ensue, it's at OK State. But I'm interested to see how that goes as far as rankings go, because if Oklahoma finally gets a big-time win, a legitimate win, they're back in the top 10. They're not a top four team.
Yeah, they're not in playoff, because again, Oklahoma State, you know, that's a good win. But well, there's just a what's interesting is, you know, this is a week to week kind of thing, and Oregon's got to be feeling really good about itself, and then all of a sudden you just get absolutely destroyed. But boy, I mean, it's fun talking about all this and letting it play out on the field. You know, it was a joke that the committee ranked Michigan ahead of Michigan State right after Michigan State had won, but Michigan State laid an egg and played itself out. Ultimately, over 12 games, these teams will generally know, because even the ones we think might be great or not, we'll find out. It'll determine itself on the field.
Yeah, and I think that's really why we're here for this. Now, I'm just looking ahead. You know, the American Athletic Conference, I think, is the most intriguing here, because you've got an undefeated Cincinnati team that's 7-0 in their conference. They are undefeated. They're 11-0. Houston is 10-1 overall, but they're 8-0 in the conference. That, I think, you know, what if Cincinnati doesn't win their division?
Let's see. I'm looking at it. It looks like they don't have divisions in that league. I think
they're not their division, but what if they don't win their conference?
Yeah, I think they take the top two for the, yeah. So they'd play in the championship game.
Yeah,
and yeah, that would be really, really bad. That would be really, really, really bad for the American Athletic Conference and for all other non-major conferences of college football. Seriously, this is the chance. This is the chance. This is Cincinnati's chance. This is the smaller conference's chance. And if Houston goes out there and beats Cincinnati, man, I would feel for every
what would happen. Cincinnati and what UCF would happen to the playoff? You would have to take two SEC teams and two Big Ten teams, right? Or does a two loss Oregon get in? Or would you take a two loss Michigan team that, you know, like that would be the worst case scenario.
An Oklahoma or Oklahoma State or Notre Dame. Notre Dame is still out there.
Yeah. We always forget about Notre Dame because they're not playing in a championship.
They're not in leagues. And so, yeah, they've only lost the one game. They're still out there. And I'm trying to see what the – and their loss was to Cincinnati. So there's nothing wrong with that loss. They've got Stanford left. So Notre Dame would be the – if Cincinnati were to lose, Notre Dame would probably be that next team in.
Yeah, and listen, this is going to be the craziest week of the year. You know, it's rivalry week in a lot of conferences, so it's going to be interesting to see what happens here. But until then, this has been the We Are Podcast, the DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcast Network. Thank you, as always, for tuning in, and we'll catch you again next week after Penn State plays Michigan State for the prestigious Land Grant Trophy.